everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, everyone. Welcome. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for listening. I have a great show for you today. Today's show is all about building a parent-child relationship that both you and your child love and cherish. Now, research shows that parents who maintain a warm connection with their children while also setting high expectations and following through are the most likely to have children who are happy and well-adjusted. And that's really what we all desire, right? A happy, joyful life that both our children and us love. Now, my guest today is Faith Collins. With more than a dozen years of working with children and families, Faith is a parenting coach, public speaker, and classroom teacher. She has a master's in early childhood studies and has taught adult classes for parents and daycare providers in the U.S., England, and online. She's also the author of a new book called Joyful Toddlers and Preschoolers. Create a life that you and your child both love. She works with individuals, families, in person and by phone, and lives in Denver, Colorado with her husband and daughter. You can learn more about her at joyfultoddlers.com. So welcome to the program, Faith. So great to have you with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely, Faith. Now, before we get started on the topic today, now, I know that as a relationship expert and therapist, people always assume that I have the perfect marriage. Do people always assume that you have the perfect relationship with your daughter? And do you try your strategies and your coaching with her as well?
I absolutely use all of my strategies with her. And it was really interesting, Terry, to have worked with other people's children and other families for so long before having a child of my own. And then once I had my own little girl, she was doing all of those same things.
that you talk to people about, right?
Exactly.
Everybody's the same.
Yep.
And so how old is your daughter and what is her name?
Her name is Sophie, and she turned 4 in January. So when I was writing my book, she was 2 years old. So I really was right in the thick of it. My book is really aimed at people with children ages 1 to 5. So I was in the thick of it, and I am still in the thick of it with her.
Now, what inspired you, or what was your motivation for writing your book?
Yeah, well, I had been working with parents and families for a while, and I really discovered that there's just a huge gaping hole in terms of strategies that are, you know, for people who are committed to positive parenting, to respect-based parenting. There's a really big hole for those toddler and preschooler years. You know, there's lots of information on what to do with your infant to establish, you know, secure attachment. There's lots of resources of what to do with children over about age 4 or 5 when children can, you can talk about what happened and reflect back and take other people's perspectives. But that age is 1 to 5. There really was just nothing there. What do you do?
You are so right, Faith. You know, I never thought about it. You know, we have all that literature and all those strategies for infants. And then when the kids go to school, but it's like we're lost in those years.
Yes. And, you know, what do we do? How do we get buy-in from children when explaining and convincing don't work, which they often don't work in the toddler and preschooler years? And what do we do if we can't get buy-in? Do we just drop our requests? Or do we, you know, insist? Do we try and convince them? Like, what tools do we have when the one tool that's offered doesn't work? And that's what I really dived into the research and also into my own personal experience and my work with hundreds of families.
That is wonderful, Faith. So tell us, what are some of the most common issues that you hear about when you work with parents or coach parents? Or what do you mean by buy-in?
Right. So, you know, you mentioned at the beginning in the intro that parents who have high warmth and high expectations have the best outcomes, have kids who are happy, who are curious, who are, you know, go along with what's, who follow the rules even when the parents aren't around, right? And, but the misconception about that research is that, you know, is that it's been said that we should discuss, we should tell children why we're asking them to do what we want them to do and engage in discussion until they agree to do what we're asking. And that works really well with adolescents.
Right.
And it doesn't work so well with younger children. And so, you know, so what I see with parents who are really committed to having a respectful relationship with their child is that when they can't convince their child to do something, they often just drop that request. And then they fall inadvertently into having high warmth and low expectations. And that is known as permissive parenting. And permissive parenting tends to raise children who are either little dictators or who are very fragile and need kind of everything smoothed out for them. Either way, these kids end up being not very resilient. And resiliency is so important for children to grow up, to be able to roll with the punches and to adapt when things don't go how they wish they would.
So let me recap for just a second and help me understand and listeners understand just to make sure that we're getting what you're saying. So in general, there's a misconception out there that parents should discuss and continue to discuss and tell kids why they want something. Why I want you to set the table, child? Why I want you to make your bed or even play well and share with kids? And what that is a strategy that works well with adolescents, but it doesn't work well with kids who are 1 to 5. And so that what we need to have are high warmth with our children, as well as high expectations, and that we shouldn't back down. We should continue to have those high expectations. Is that what you are saying, Faith?
That's exactly it. And I look at how do we maintain our warmth while setting boundaries. Right. And how do we help children do what we've asked in a way that gets them to say yes more frequently? And what do we do when we can't get to that yes? How do we help them in a way that's compassionate and kind and that builds our relationship rather than setting ourselves up in power struggles with one another?
I like that. Okay, so let's work with two situations that I guess I've come up with or I see parents dealing with a lot. The first you've sort of mentioned, Faith. And so what is your advice when children say no? I ask my child, even though my child is only 4, to help me set the table or help me make the bed or have them make the bed or share well with their friends, and they say no. How do I stay with the warmth but continue to have high expectations?
Right. Well, the first thing that I do is I want to help parents to switch their viewpoints on what children are doing when they say no. You know, when I give talks and I say, why do young children say no? Why do toddlers and preschoolers say no? I often get they're establishing their independence, they're separating themselves from us, they're testing boundaries. And while those things all do happen at this age, I would argue that most of the time that children say no to us, what they are really saying is, I don't feel as connected to you in this moment as I wish I did.
And this I want more love is really it, right?
And this is why when we turn things into a game, that those no's melt away. It's not because we're tricking them into forgetting that they want to be separate from us. No, right? We are responding to their request for connection, and they're able to be responsive to us in return.
And so when, how would I do that? How do I, you know, make a game out of it or stay warm, setting the boundary still?
So we know that children, we know that anybody, not just children, we know that connection is happening when we do something and the response that we get is, let's do it again, right? Mm-hmm. And that looks different at every age and different genders and different, you know, everything looks different. But when a person says, let's do it again, you know that connection is happening. And with young children, I came up with a handy mnemonic to help you find tools in that moment when you're getting a no and the last thing you want to do is turn something into a game. You don't feel like connecting when your child says no. But remember, if you want to connect with your child, don't forget to smile. Children feel connected through singing, through movement, through imagination, through love, and through exaggeration or humor.
Wow. Now you're going to have to say that again. So when a child says no, they're not saying I need independence or I'm testing the boundaries. What they're really saying is I don't feel connected to you. So think, listeners, about that notion of smile. Mm-hmm. And give us what that is again.
So S is for singing. And it's really singing in rhymes. Nursery rhymes are very connecting. And if you have, you know, sing a little song while you're going through, sing I've Been Working on the Railroad while you march out to your car and climb into the car seat.
Right? I like that.
M is for movement. And this is movement and touch. And this is one that some parents really get easily and other parents never go to it. But, you know, running with your kids, spinning them around, anything with knees over the head. Also, soft touch or firm strokes down the sides and the arms, and also snuggles of every type. This falls under the M for movement and touch.
I is what, imagination?
Imagination. And, you know, especially the older that children get in this 1 to 5 age range, the more active their imagination is. But if you say, you know, come on, I've told you 5 times, it's time to go, is a lot different than hip hop over here, little bunny. I have a little bunny treat for you. And you reach down and you hold your hands out and that little bunny will hop over and eat that imaginary carrot, right? And off the two of you go. So imagine, and then older children, those 4s and 5s, stories are really, really connecting. And my daughter right now loves, tell me a story about when you were a little girl, mommy, right? And I tell her stories about when I was a little girl. I tell her stories about when she was a little girl. She loves hearing the story of last Halloween.
Oh, I love it. Right? Yes, those are great stories.
So imagination really is a powerful, powerful tool. And then L is for love and affection of all types. And if you try to connect with your child through being silly or through turning it into a game and you get an angry no or stop that, right, then that is almost always because your child is longing for love. And that's when you drop the silliness and you come in, hey, buddy, what's going on? You give a big hug, you know, and I have often said to children, you know, wow, you're having a tough time. Let me give you a big hug and that'll help, right? And I just give a big hug and it just can feels like it can last as long as that child needs. Mm-hmm. And then, whew, okay, now you're ready to sit at the table. Now you're ready to get your shoes on, right? That love, just taking a moment to really love them where they're at, can just help that anger and defiance just melt away.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's so true. I have to interrupt because it's so true, even of kids when they're older, Faith. I remember so vividly when my daughter would become angry about something at school or with her peers, and she'd go into her room and I would knock on the door and she'd say, Mom, do not come in. You know, she'd be so upset and I'd be just like, I'm going to come and just give you a hug. I'm going to love you all up. And it would just seem like it would melt her anger that she had with her friends and whatever happened at school away. So instead of saying, talk to me, instead of saying, you can't be angry, just giving that love and affection sometimes melts children's worries, concerns away, at least for the moment, or at least outwardly, I think. And so I love that. Hugs, affections, just helping your kids deal with whatever they're going through at the moment.
Absolutely. And then that E is exaggeration. And it's really humor of all types, but toddler humor and preschool humor, what do those kids find funny? They find, you know, funny sound effects, funny voices, you know, walking like a giant or tiptoeing like a fairy. You know, you have a child who won't wash their hands, you know, have them put their hand under the water and then rub it with your hand, go, ee-er, ee-er. What's that? Let me see your other hand. Put it under the water. Ew, ew. right? Little sound effects can help melt that no away because, again, do it again, right? And that humor, just being silly. Think about cartoons. Cartoons have sound effects. They have silly voices. They have, things pretending to slip. They have things, pretending you don't know how things go. All of those things are hilariously funny to young children, and that's why cartoons are so draw children in so much. Well, we can incorporate more of those into our interactions with kids, especially all those must-do parts of the day, right? Tests of bodily care, transitions, all the things that have to go the way we want them to go.
Right. And so when kids are then getting ready for kindergarten or elementary school and they have to get ready early in the morning and get on a bus or get to class on time, school on time, we can incorporate all these as well because our kids are tired. They're saying, no, we don't want to go. We don't want to get dressed. These we can use at that point as well.
Exactly. And really kind of any transition, right? I had one mom in one of my classes. And she, when it was time to leave the park, and her daughter never wanted to leave the park, and she would just, instead of announcing and lecturing and explaining why they had to go home to start getting dinner ready, et cetera, she would just start playing, who can find something yellow? And they would start walking towards their car, and they would each take turns looking for things that were yellow. And then the next day, it might be, let's find things that are blue. Right? And children live in the moment. And when the moment is enjoyable, then they can be happy in that moment. And we often think of transitions as things that have to be done to get from one point to another, but children don't think that way. So transform those transitions into enjoyable experiences in each moment, and then kids will be happy to go through them.
I love that. And so what is your advice then if, let's say, our child has a meltdown in public, at the grocery store, right?
Yep.
How does a parent not lose their cool? What do they do? Do I use the same mnemonic, smile?
You absolutely can. And one thing that I have discovered is that children, you can often tell that a meltdown is brewing, right? And then we often think, if I can just get done quickly enough before it breaks, before the storm breaks, then, and so you start rushing. But the problem is when children are feeling disconnected to us and then we start rushing, it just makes things worse. So counterintuitively, you see that storm brewing, take a moment, pull your cart off to the side and stop and take a few minutes to connect and play a little game, sing a little song, tell a little story, just really enjoy one another for a moment or two. And then you can say, there, now we're ready. We just have three more things to get, and then we'll get in line. But sometimes you can't, right? Like the storm breaks no matter what. And at that point, it really, one thing is, remember, other shoppers have been there.
Right.
Right? Like
so
we imagine that there's just kind of, daggers of judgment coming at us. But really, more people are feeling compassion than you imagine. And one thing that you can, once we've lost our child in that way, we can't get to a yes anymore, then it's time for us, a game isn't going to do anything. So it's time for us to just turn on our compassion and be matter of fact and compassionate, right? And we do what needs to be done, whether we're in public or whether we are in our home and that meltdown is happening. We calmly and compassionately do what needs to be done. And sometimes in a grocery store, we have to leave with a child, right? But other times we may just calmly and compassionately go and finish what needs to be done. And while we are calmly and compassionately doing this, we can offer them little olive branches of connection, right? An olive branch of connection might be a little, put hands in front of your face and do a little peekaboo and see, do they kind of pause in their crying and give a little smile, or do they get angry, right? Like, and they can accept our olive branch or they can reject it. We don't mind either way. We go back to being calm and collected and as compassionate as possible. And then 30 seconds or a minute later, we offer another little olive branch. This time it might be a little, your two fingers turn into a little bunny rabbit who's hopping up his arm and whispering a secret into his ear. And he can accept that olive branch or he can reject it. We don't mind either way, right? But these olive branches offer a way for children to get out of that negative interaction and to come back into connection. And sometimes they say yes and sometimes they say no.
I love that. I mean, and it gets back to the notion, Faith, that when your kids are defiant, when they do have a meltdown, that it's really about that they want more connection, that they don't feel connected to you. So as parents, we need to remember that, that they're not asserting independence, that they're not, just saying no to say no, that really they want some connection. So putting out that olive branch, whatever it may be, we can then assess whether our kids want it or are able to take it. And again, I love the idea that you said that, you know, when our kids do have meltdowns or where they are, when they are defiant, that many people in the situation are actually really compassionate. I was on the plane last weekend and a child had a meltdown and I just went to the parents and said, I have been there. I know what it's like and it's okay. We are not judging you. And you could see the parents just go, oh my God, thank you. You know, because you think everyone is just judging you at that moment. Totally. Yeah. Now, Faith, we only have a few minutes left, and I really want parents to understand that they are role models for their children, that children watch us and you like a hawk. So what advice can you give parents in just a few minutes about being a good role model for their children, dealing with stress or dealing with conflict or dealing with meltdowns or dealing with saying no? How can we be good role models for our children?
Yeah, you know, we know that young children learn through imitation, but we often forget that that means that we then have to strive to be people who are worthy of imitating.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes,
and,
yes.
So one of the ways that I do this is when I start to feel annoyed or angry, which happens, right? We're all, with every parent, it's that 24-hour-ness of parenting that we have every type of interactions with our children. And sometimes they drive us crazy. And sometimes we get angry. And when that happens, if you can notice that you're getting angry, then one of the things that I like to do is I will model anger management. And so I find myself yelling and I don't want to be yelling. And I'll stop and I'll say, wow, I don't want to yell. I'm feeling angry. I'm going to go get a drink of water. And then
I will go
and get a drink of water. And like I get the cup and I fill it up with water and I take a drink. And that almost always calms me down enough to interact in a different way. And then I'll turn to my child and say, that's better. Let's start over. Right? And just letting children know, like we can stop ourselves. Right? We can, and anything that gets you moving or puts a little space between you and whatever is triggering you, you know, stepping outside for a moment, stopping to pet the dog, getting a drink of water, doing some stretches, taking some yoga breaths, like all of these things are tools that we can use to help lower our level of arousal. And when we announce them to our children, I'm feeling really frustrated. I'm going to do some stretches, right? And you do stretches, and it feels silly the first time you do it because you would never do that with an adult.
Right. But although we could do.
Although we could, right? But you, in this way, we are showing them, this is a tool that I can use to calm myself down. And then our children can start to use that as well. And we don't have to lecture them about it. We just have to model it.
Right.
To them.
And I love that idea because we're not lecturing them. We are stepping outside of us and using it as a strategy to calm us down. But we're also speaking it as we're doing it that shows and tells our child what we're doing and the management tools. I love that idea. And I actually think we could do it in many other ways with adults as well, Faith. So that is a wonderful strategy. Thank you so much. We are all out of time. I thank you so much for joining us, Faith. Wonderful information, wonderful advice. And I just thank you for sharing that all with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, if you want to connect with Faith Collins, please go to her website at joyfultoddlers.com. And again, her new book is called Joyful Toddlers and Preschoolers, Create a Life That You and Your Child Both Love by Faith Collins. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here always to help your relationships be the best they can be. My website, personal website, is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based advice that's easy to understand. So until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.